could it be? It is German Wende. Wende, the term where West and East Germany comes together. Yeah, so, same reason, of course. See, so we see here the frequency of Wende has dramatically changed at this time. In German focus, so the German focus, which is of course about German politics and the fall of the wall of Eastern Germany. And if you see, if you calculate, for example, locations before 89 and afterwards, you see that the expression or the word Wende is used completely different afterwards. Because afterwards it was clear that Wende is. So you just use the word Wende and it means the Wende of Eastern Germany. Yeah. Before, Wende was used in much more contexts which didn't have something to do with politics, or whatever. And the so usage was not very prominent, but very vague. And afterwards, it was really used mainly in the expression meaning. Another important concept is the calculation of keywords, if you do some corpus compressions. So the idea is here, if you have two corpora, A and B, and want to calculate the words or whatever linguistic entity, words, lemmas, engrams, whatever, that appear significantly more often in the corpus A instead of the corpus B. So, for example, if you have a case where you have an election campaign of 100k, and want to calculate which words are typical for Obama compared to McCain, and which ones are typical for McCain compared to Obama. You can do a lot of comparisons like this, also in time. So if you have two corpora, one corpus of time before 89, for example, and afterwards, and you want to know which words are typical for the old period compared to the new period. The idea here is that you can really come to typical expressions of words inductively. So you don't need to have an idea that, for example, Wende should be an important word in German history, but you can really have two corpora representing these two time periods before 89 and afterwards, and calculate the words which are typical for the newer one compared to the older one. And then you get words typical for the new one, and you can go and see these words have something to do with the political term of one. So we do some calculation of keyness, also using the test of significance. And what we normally do then is that we draw these tables of what we observe. So here you have invented figures, of course, of two corpora. Let's say you have a corpus A and a corpus B, and in corpus A we have in total 1,000 words, so a very small corpus. In corpus B we have 2,000 words, or better than 1,000. And then let's say we look for the word Wende, and you observe that we have in corpus A 15 appearances of this word, and in corpus B also 15. Yeah. Okay, then you check and say, how should we compare these two figures? That we have 15 and 15, does it mean that nothing happens in this corpora, so there's no difference between this corpora, or is there a difference? What values would you expect to have in this corpora? What are the okay. What would we expect? Yeah, we see that, of course, the second corpus is twice as big as the first one. So if we have in total 30 achievements of vendor, we would normally expect that we find in corpus A 10 and in corpus B 20, because corpus B is twice as big as the first one, so we have to divide 30 into according to the size of the oversize of this cube overall. So quite straightforward. And now is the question, if we have this minus here that we have observed, how much do they differ from what you would expect if we had a random distribution of these matches in these two? And here again, we do the same thing as in the case where we calculate locations, that we do a test of significance, which just says us if this distribution here, what we expected or what we observed, if this distribution here differs enough from the expected values, that we can be sure this distribution here is not chance, but it's really a significant result. We can also here use a chi-square test. Here's the formula for this chi-square test, which looks a bit scary, but it's very easy. My main idea is that I have observed values, so observed values are the values I have in the observed table, and expected values, so here in the expected table. And for each cell in this table, I calculate the observed value minus the expected one, square that, and divide it by the expected one. I summarize for each cell, and then I have the chi-square value. If I have this chi-square value, I can look up this value in a table of critical values, where I then get a value of p, so the probability for the null hypothesis, which states that there is no significant difference between these two tables. And in this case, p value would be 0.052. So what does that mean? That means that probability that we can be sure that the difference is significant is quite low. Normally, we would say if the null hypothesis, so that there's no significant difference, then p must be lower than 0.05, so that we can be 95% sure that there is a significant difference. So here we are less than 95% sure that there is a significance. So here we would say, well, these values here, 15 and 15, these corpora, do not significantly differ from the expected values 10 and 20 to be sure enough that there is a significant difference between the expected and the observed values. So here you would say, no, the word Bender does not differ significantly in our test corpus. Now, of course, we have invented values and very tiny corpora, so it's not a big surprise that it's not significant. If we have big corpora, then also slight differences between, not tiny difference between the observed and the expected value would lead to big significant values. So normally you don't have to calculate software tools do that for you, and they just, if you compare it to the corpora, they just take each word and do this test of the significance for each word, and give you a table of all the words ranked according to this measure of significance. And then you see just the top two words which are most difficult for your focus compared to the other ones. But I think it's quite useful to understand the idea behind this calculation, what is done in the top. Here you have a result of such a calculation. Here I've calculated the typical routes for political parties in Germany in corpus of the minutes in the Bundestag, so the parliament, the German parliament. And there we have a nice corpus where we have all the speeches of the different members of the parliament. And of course, you have rich metadata, so you know from each person, from which party she is. And then you can calculate, for example, typical words for the Green Party here in the first column, then for the center party, CSU, for the left wing party, and the Social Democrats here. And if you know some German, and if you know something about German politics, you wouldn't be very surprised about the result. You see, for example, the Green Party column, that's Atomkraft, so nuclear power is an important word for them. And this is quite interesting that in this time here, so in Parliament, the topic nuclear power was very important. After Fukushima, the catastrophe in Fukushima. You see that if the Green Party talks about this topic, they use the word Atom, or Atomic, Atomkraft, whereas the Center Party, they say Kern, nuclear power. Of course, it's the same concept, but you have two words. If you use either Atom or Kern, this is together with a political statement, because the Green Party, they are very critical, of course, against nuclear power. They use Atom as a word to describe the same thing, whereas they try to use words which seem to be more proper for describing nuclear power. Yeah, and Die Linke, for example, they have your Krieg, so war, which is also interesting because, of course, Germany at this time they were engaged in the war in Afghanistan, and the center party they never talk about the war, but just about the invasion. Whereas the opposition, they say that this is a war, this is not just an invasion. So you see, if you have these typical words for the parties, you see really different rhetorical strategies, different topics they use, but also different ways you can talk about the topic, and then you can go to conclusions. So this is an example of how you can use okay, so collocations, distributions, and keywords are very basic concepts which are often used in folks linguistics. Of course, there are a lot more concepts you can use, whereas you have already heard about topic modeling, for example, which is a method widely used in visual analysis to calculate specific topics. Classify texts on the basis of word distributions, different topics. So there is a lot more, of course, but I think with these two basic concepts. concepts, locations, institutions, and keywords to already do a lot of things you're interested in working with Okay, any questions so far? So, then I want to give you just a brief view on natural language processing especially about annotation, because this is what we normally do if we compile a corpus that after we have all the texts in the initial format, we try to enhance them with linguistic information. And I just give you some slides how this is done and how it works. Okay. So, if we annotate texts, then we mean that we add linguistic information to words in the corpus, or also to phrases, sentences, so whatever units you have in the corpus interested in. Two typical things we do if we do annotation is stemming or lemmatization and part of speech tagging. So adding part of speech information to a corpus. Annotation can, of course, be done manually, and this is done very often if you just have a corpus and you're interested in specific structures in the corpus, and then you try to annotate things like semantic meanings or my information about the sentences just manually, then you can afterwards, of course, create the annotation, or you can do it automatically, or sometimes you have also a semi automatic approach to annotate something. So if automatic annotation does not work very good, then sometimes you can do a part of the annotation automatically, and then evaluate the automatic annotation and correct it, for example. What we normally do, if you do annotation in the corpus, then the first step is to do tokenizing, so breaking up the text into words or other elements. And then, if you have this tokenization, then we try to find the sentence buffers, and then we do tagging, part of speech tagging. Sometimes we also do automatic syntax parsing, so if you're not fully interested in word classes, but we also have information that something is a noun phrase, a preposition phrase, whatever, we can also do some parsing, syntax parsing. Of course, this is not so easy, and the error rate is bigger than if you just do part of speech on word level. So, what is a token? This is a token. I was once in the museum in Berlin, and they showed these things here and said, those are tokens. And I thought, well, of course it is, and I always thought, I know what tokens are. Why do they say that these are tokens? She's in the museum, for the Asiatische Museum, tokens, book, very old ones, hand on pottery, and they were used to represent sheep. And if there was a farm and a shepherd, and he wanted to hand over his sheep to another one, he had for each sheep he has a token out of pottery, and he put these tokens into this this thing here, and said, "Well, here are my sheep. I have 20 tokens in it, and here you have 20 sheep." So the tokens represented kind of the real sheets. So everyone knows, well, I gave you 20 sheets. And in a sense, this is the same thing if we have tokens in linguistics, that tokens are the real words we have on the field. We represent these real words in the field with these tokens. So if you do some tokenization, then a sentence shows normally like this, that we have on each line a token. This is a sentence out of this laugh stories corpus we use for the laugh in terms of political sites. Normally, it's quite straightforward to define a token that we just can say if there's a gap between words, then there must be a word separation. But sometimes it's a bit more trickier. For example, if you have punctuation marks, the rule stating that in place of a punctuation mark, this is also a word separation, etc. But with some rules, you can do that. Then, recognition of sentence boundaries. So that would end up with a representation like this, that we can use a kind of an ephemeral element to state where a sentence starts and ends. And then, if you use a speech tagger, then this tagger automatically adds part of speech information. So we see in the second column here, abbreviations for speech tags, these abbreviations, they follow a specific tag set. So first you need a tag set defining which categories you are you are using, and then you can look up these categories in the tag set. In this case here, the tag set is from the Pen Tree Bank, so before we see, you just get the description of all these tags. So JJ stands for adjective, for example. And then in the third column, you have the stemmed versions of each word, so you see that the plural S foods here is here in the stemma column, singular food. Also here, the plural sites. And if you have verbs, you can also be infinitive here. And if you have this information, of course, it's much easier to search for it. If you end full, you will also find fools, plural form fools, it is not necessary to search for fonts. This automatic tagging is done by the statistical approach, where the tagger has learned based on a training corpus which has been annotated manually, typical combinations of word classes. So the tagger knows that, for example, in English, the noun is often preceded by an adjective, so it is not a big surprise if it is. On the other hand, the tagger has a lexicon where a lot of word forms are listed with the possible word classes and also the static information. So this is the statistical approach mainly, trained on training corpus, and of course taggers are not always right. They do errors, and if your corpus is very different from the trainings, from the training corpus that has been used to train the tagger, then of course you get more errors than if your corpus is more similar to the training corpus. Normally these taggers are trained by newspaper texts, and if you have, for example, a corpus of spoken language, then you would have much more errors than if you also use a newspaper. So, I think we'll have to break now, because afterwards I want to introduce the components of the Corpus Workbench, and we will do that together. So if you have a laptop with you, then should take your laptop.